I want to take up in volume 17 in July the 25th, 1924. And the heading says that the divine will keeps searching for souls who would lose all their rights so that the divine will might continue its divine act by of placing all souls in their arms as it did with Jesus on the cross. This is a very important section. So Louisa says that this morning my sweet Jesus made himself seen in my interior in the act of stretching his arms out in the shape of a cross. And I remained stretched with him, she said. And then Jesus said, my daughter, the last act of my life was to lay myself on the cross and to stay there until I died. With my arms opened, unable to move or to oppose what the executioners were doing to me. I was the true portrait, the living image of one who lives not in the human will, but in the divine. So there goes all our romantic images of being flying high and really having a good time, that the true image of living in the divine will is the crucified image of Jesus on the cross. Being unable to move or to oppose myself, having lost every right over myself because it was taken from him, the horrible tension that was in my arms, how many things they said. And while I was losing my rights, others acquired my life. Now that's the essential piece there. That the person living in the divine will is living sacrificial love so that others may rise from the dead and live in God's presence. So Jesus said that as he was losing his rights over himself, others acquired his life. The first right was that of the supreme will, which, using its immensity and all-seeingness, gathered all souls, innocent and sinful, good and holy, and placed them in my outstretched arm. So here you've got the fulfillment of John chapter 10. I am the good shepherd, and I lay down my life for my sheep. And then in the same chapter, Jesus says, the Father loves me because I will lay down my life. Now, the Father loved Jesus infinitely, absolutely, unconditionally, eternally, anyway. So that text is saying that the Father had a very special love for Jesus because he sacrificed himself to give life to us. So it's all about sacrificial love. And until we get the message that it is all about sacrificial love, it's all about love, that is divine love, that's agape, and it's all about sacrificial love. That divine love is sacrificial. It gives of itself to give life to others. So Jesus said that in his wide open arms, all souls, good and bad, were placed in his outstretched arms so that he might bring them to heaven. So there you have this wonderful, wonderful image of Jesus as the great bridge, the Pontifex Maximus, and he hanging over the abyss and the people of God walking triumphantly over his shoulders into heaven. Anything we achieve spiritually is through him, with him, and in him. We are nothing of ourselves. Jesus said, I refused no one. So this is love without borders. I'm saying that slowly to make sure you hear it. Love without borders. We don't ask whether the people believe or don't believe, if they're in a good religion or a bad religion, if they're atheists or believers or whatever. We don't ask anything. We simply place all souls in the arms of Jesus. He said, I refused no one. So this is love without borders. So the divine will gave a place to everyone in my arms. So all souls were placed in Jesus. He's the one who determines what happens to them eternally. Now the supreme will is a continuous act, never interrupted. And what the divine will does once, it never ceases doing. And even though my humanity is in heaven and is not subject to suffering now, it keeps searching for souls who do not move in the human will, but in the divine, and who oppose nothing. Souls who would lose all their rights, so that the right being wholly of the divine will, the divine will would continue its act of placing all souls, sinners and saints, innocent and wicked, in the arms of the one who offers to lay herself in my will, in order to repeat and continue what my arms did outstretched on the cross. Now, there you've got something absolutely divine, and that is that Jesus wants us to be a perfect replica of himself. And he is looking for those souls who will surrender all of their own rights, become a crucified love, small l, as he was the crucified love, all capital letters. And we become a tiny mirror image of him, so that he can place all souls in our care as well. So he said the divine will wants to place all souls, the sinners and saints, innocent and wicked, in the arms of the one who offers to lay herself in my will, in order to repeat and to continue what my arms did outstretched on the cross. This is why I have laid myself within you, Jesus said to Louisa, so that the supreme will may continue its act of bringing everyone into my arms, in you and through you. So now Jesus talks about what sanctity really is. Sanctity, he said, is not formed by one single act. If you want to make a cardigan or a jumper, you cannot make it with one stitch. The one stitch has no likeness at all to the jumper. You need thousands of stitches put together in a particular pattern and in a particular way to get this beautiful garment. So the garment of sanctity is woven by many thousands and thousands and thousands of acts. Sanctity is not formed by one single act, but by many acts united together, like putting your jumper together. One act by itself forms neither sanctity nor perversity. Because since the continuation of the acts is missing, the colours and the living shades of sanctity are missing. Do you remember that old saying that we got when we were children? Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. But you must begin by sowing the acts. As I shared with somebody only today, if you sow one potato seed in your garden, you're not expecting a field of potatoes. St. Paul is quite clear about that in 2 Corinthians when he says that you reap what you sow, and you also reap in the measure that you sow. So if there aren't continuous acts in the divine will, then the colours and the living shades of sanctity are missing. And because these are missing, one cannot attribute a just weight and value either to sanctity or to perversity. One bad act doesn't make an evil person. One good act doesn't make a saint. So what makes sanctity shine and places the seal on it are the continuous good acts. These are the continuous acts in the divine will. No one can say he is rich because he possesses one coin. But those who possess extensive properties, villas, palaces, etc., etc., and a huge bank book, they can say they're rich. So it is for sanctity as well. And if sanctity needs many good acts, many sacrifices, much heroism, but can also be subject to gaps, to intervals, and so on, the sanctity in my will is not subject to intermittent phases. Once we get to the place of putting our will permanently in the divine will, that's it. We're clicked into the eternal will permanently. That's just the way it is. We're not going back to the human will. Up to that moment, we are simply going in and out of the divine will. But we have not reached this wonderful place where our will has finally and totally said, fiat mihi secundum verbum tuum. Be it done unto me according to your word. We've not really passed the test of being children of Mary yet. So Jesus said, the sanctity of my will is not subject to intermittent phases, but must associate itself with the continuous act of the eternal volition, which never, never ceases, but is always acting, always operating, always triumphant, which always loves and never stops. Now, here's a little bit of discernment for you that you can find out where you're at in the divine will. Because if your love stops, or if you make an excuse that, you know, you don't have to love that particular person or love in that particular situation, these are the gaps which tell you that your will has not finally clicked into the divine will. So the sanctity in my will brings into the soul the mark of the operating or the work of our Creator. So the sanctity in the divine will actually portrays to other people, they can see it quite clearly, that this is the mark of the work of the Creator. This isn't the work of a creature. And that is, it's his continuous love. It's his continuous preservation of all things created by him. He never changes. He is immutable. This is what is declared in heaven in the book of Revelation, chapter 4 and verse 8. The God who is, who was, and who is to come. The eternal one, the God who said, ego eimi, I am. There was nothing else to say. That's it, complete. One who is subject to changing belongs to the earth. That's the low place, not to heaven. That's the high place. Changing is of the human will, not the divine. Interrupting good is of the creature, the low place, the human will. It's not of the Creator. Therefore, all this would be unbefitting for the sanctity of living in my will, because the sanctity in the divine will contains the insignia, the image of the sanctity of the Creator. Imagine we can be a tiny miniature of the sanctity of the Creator. The mind boggles. It's fantastic. Therefore, be attentive. Leave all rights to the supreme will. And Jesus said, I will keep forming in you the sanctity of living in the divine will. So this is something that goes on 24/7, 365. It goes on all the time. It doesn't break. It doesn't stop just because you're sleeping. That's very important. That's why it's so important to fuse into the divine will and offer your sleep to the Lord, so that everything in your entire day is his. And we start getting used to the idea that the divine will has taken over. So since the emphasis has been on acts, we now go into July the 29th, 1924, in which the acts done in the divine will form a prop on which Jesus and the soul can both take rest. This morning, after much struggling, Louisa said Jesus came and was seen in her interior. Now, that's Luke 17:21. And it's also 1 Corinthians 3:16. Know you not that you are the temple of the living God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? So he showed himself tired as if he wanted to rest. And since there was some kind of a prop within me, he extended his arms to cling to that prop. And placing his head on it, he rested. And not only did he rest, but he invited me to rest with him. So if you go to Matthew 11:28-30, Jesus invites us all to rest in him and with him. How enjoyable it was, she said, to be leaning on that prop together with Jesus to take a little rest after so much bitterness. Then afterwards he said to me, "My daughter, do you want to know what this prop is, which relieves us so much and gives us rest? It's all your acts done in the divine will. Therefore, if the prop is to be fit to be leaned on, we've got to do many, many, many acts in the divine will. It's all your acts done in my will that formed this prop for me and for you, which is so strong as to be able to sustain the weight of heaven and earth, which I contain within me and to give me rest." My will alone contains this strength and this virtue, which is so great. The acts done in my will bind heaven and earth and enclose within themselves the divine power such as to be able to sustain God himself. Let me read that for you again. The acts done in my will bind heaven and earth. There's great power in this kind of prayer. And these acts enclose within themselves the divine power. That's why they're so effective. They're even able to sustain God himself. On hearing this, Louisa said to him, "My love, yet with all this prop you are talking about, I fear that you may leave me. What shall I do without you? And you know how miserable and good for nothing that I am. So I fear that as you leave me, your will may depart as well." And Jesus said, "My daughter, why do you fear? I want to give you 1 John 4:18. Perfect love casts out fear." And look how high Louisa is in her relationship with God. And she's still pestered by this fear that he might actually leave her. Jesus said, "This fear is your human will, which would want to enter the field to take a few steps. My will excludes every fear because it has nothing to fear." It has nothing to fear. Naturally, it's sovereign. On the contrary, my will is confident of itself and it is unshakable. Even more, you must know that as the soul decides to let herself be possessed by my will and to live in it, since my will is linked with all created things and there's nothing over which it does not have its dominion, in the same way, the soul remains linked with all created things, and as she does her acts, her daughtership with my will, her dwelling, her possession, remain inscribed on all created things with indelible characters. Now this really, really needs to be looked at line by line, word by word. I want to give you Romans 8:19 because Jesus is describing those wonderful sons of God that the whole earth is crying out for so that the entire earth can recover as well. "Look at the whole universe," he said. "Your name, your daughtership with my will is written with indelible characters in the heavens, in the stars, in the sun, in everything." Because she's been praying her divine acts and doing her rounds, including all of creation. So, how can it ever be possible that this eternal and divine mother may leave her dear daughter born of her and raised with so much love? Therefore, remove every fear. If you do not want to embitter me, and Jesus suffers enough from all the evil that goes on the earth. And while he was saying this, Louisa looked into the heavens, into the sun, and to all the rest, and she could see her name written with the title of Daughter of the Divine Will. May everything, she said, be for the glory of God. Now, this reminds me of an incident in St. Teresa's life when she was walking with her father, and she looked up and she saw T in the sky. T for Therese. One day I was walking and talking to the Lord, and I said, I bet anything my name isn't written in the sky. I understand Louisa seeing her name in the great things, and I understand Therese seeing T in the sky. And with the marvellous humour with which the Lord has dealt with me all my life, he said, no, your name's in the gutter. And I looked down, and there at my feet was a fire hydrant with the two letters FH. And I just laughed. And ever since I've said to him, I know, I'm one of the ones that have to live in the gutter. I have to live in the nothing, because I don't have a chance at all if I don't stay in the nothing. So I don't mind it at all. And I don't even mind walking over the fire hydrant and putting my foot on the FH. I don't mind at all. So some people see their names or their letter in the sky, and some of us are from a much more lowly place altogether. So August the 9th, 1924. Praying, suffering, and working in the divine will are the only embankment for divine justice. Now, this is terribly important as I speak to you in the middle of the coronavirus crisis. The only thing to hold back the hand of justice is prayer, suffering, and working in the divine will. After much waiting for the presence of my adorable Jesus, Louisa said, I felt him in my interior. That again is your Luke 17, 21 and 1 Corinthians 3, 16. I felt him in my interior, extending his arms and saying to me, my daughter, extend your arms together with me in my will. Everything we do, literally everything, is to be done in his will. In order to repair for many who extend their works in the human will, which forms for them a net of all evils to hurl them into the eternal abyss. And also to do this, that is, extend your arms together with Jesus in his will to prevent his justice from pouring itself out on them. So there's two things that we're to do. That's one. And this is two. One is to make reparation for all the actions in the human will that's leading people to the abyss. And the second one is to prevent the divine justice from pouring itself on these people operating in the human will in order to vent its fury. In fact, when the creature extends herself in my will to operate and to suffer, my justice feels touched by the creature with the power of my will, and it ceases its just rigors. Now, you really need to take that on board. Look at the power that Jesus says he gives to us when we pray in the divine will. That divine justice will actually cease its rigors. So please don't think that your prayers are just not having an effect. It is a divine vein that the creature makes flow between God and the human family. And because of this divine vein, which his justice cannot help but having regard for poor humanity. So in doing our acts in the divine will, this forms this wonderful connection between heaven and earth. So I want to give you John 1:51 there, the ladder between heaven and earth. In which divine justice holds back because these wonderful divine acts of love and honour and gratitude and reparation and all the rest are coming from the earth. And while saying this, Jesus showed how creatures are preparing a great revolution among parties against the government and against the church. Now, this is 1924, and Louisa is given information, as all the prophets are, of things that are about to happen in the future if human beings don't turn around and do God's will. So a great revolution among parties against the government and against the church. What a horrible massacre could be seen, how many tragedies. And then my sweet Jesus resumed talking. "My daughter," he said, "did you see? Creatures don't want to stop. Their greed for shedding blood is not yet quenched in them. And this greed for blood provokes the divine justice to destroy entire cities by earthquakes, by water, that's tsunamis, and by fire." Now, in recent times, we've had a lot of testing by fire in America and in Australia, to take just two examples. And so the divine justice will want to make the inhabitants of these cities disappear from the face of the earth. In other words, a lot of death. "Therefore, my daughter, pray, suffer, operate in my will, because this alone can be an embankment so that my justice may not burst out with its devastating thunderbolts to destroy the whole earth." So when we do our acts in the divine will, it's like you've put your hand in the hole in the wall that stops the ocean from coming in and flooding the city. So I want to give you Leviticus 10, verses 1 to 3 and verses 4 to 7. Then Jesus continued, "Oh, if you knew how beautiful and how delightful it is to see a soul operate in my will. An image of this can be seen to you by Father Sea and Mother Earth, which are so bound and linked to each other that the water cannot be without the earth, and the earth would be sterile without the water. There is like a marriage between them, such that the sea can be called father and the earth mother, because she receives the sea. Such is the union which the soul should have in my will." So for a reflection on this, I suggest you go to the book of Job, chapter 38, verses 8 to 11. So he's going to give us an example of Father Sea in the next paragraph. And then the following one, he's going to give us an example of Mother Earth. "Now, what is there in the sea?" So this is Father Sea. "An immensity of waters. Who inhabits these waters? Whom do they nourish?" Now notice anything that God does gives life. "To whom do they give life? It is to many different fish." Or many different, we would say in English, types of fishes, types of fish. See, this is a translation from another language. So it says fishes, but fishes can be all one species, with many different types of fish, "which nourish themselves, swim and dart inside the immense sea." See then, the sea is one entity, one unit, one reality. But many types of fish actually live in it. So it's able to sustain much life. I want to put many types of fish. "However, the love and the jealousy of the sea towards the fish is so great that it keeps them hidden within itself." Now, that's what the divine will wants to do with us, is to enable us to live a hidden life inside of the divine will. "Its waters lay themselves above and below the fish, to the right and to the left. If the fish want to swim and move, it slices through the waters, and darting, it enjoys itself. And the water lets itself be cut through, but it presses itself around the fish above and below. It never leaves it. Now, that's a very important point, because that's the point that Jesus has been making to Louisa all the time, that no matter what is going on between her and the Lord, the one thing that never happens is that he would actually leave her. That would be an impossibility as far as he's concerned. So the fish, the water never leaves the fish. And there where the fish passes, it immediately closes the way behind it, leaving no trace of where it passes or where it reaches. Now notice the hiddenness there. So that no one may follow it. So you're totally safe inside of the divine will, swimming in the immense sea of the divine will. If the fish wants to be nourished, the water offers itself to feed it. If the fish wants to sleep, the water makes itself its bed, but it never leaves it. The water always presses itself around the fish. But in spite of this, one can see that in the sea there are beings which are not the waters. You can still notice the difference in the reality between the water and the fish. That's us in the divine will. We may be swimming deep in the heart of the sea of the divine will, but we're still just creatures in the divine will. One can see that in the sea there are beings which are not water. One can see motions, darts formed by these mute inhabitants, for which the sea is the life, while they are the glory, the honour and the richness of the sea. So much more, much, much more than fish is the soul who operates and lives in my will. My will is immense, the creature is finite. However, she has her motions, her voice, and her walking. And as my will sees her within itself, its love and jealousy are so great, it's much more than the sea. It lays itself above and below her, to the right and to the left. It makes itself her life, her food, her word, her work, her step, her suffering, her bed, her rest, her dwelling for this fortunate creature. In other words, he is our everything. I remember once doing a little exercise with the Lord. He didn't need it. I was the one who needed it. I said, "Lord, I am poverty." He said, "I am plenty." I said, "I am hungry." He said, "I am your food." I said, "I am sick." He said, "I am your health." I said, "I am a sinner." He said, "I am your saviour." And I went on and on and on. And whatever I said, he was the solution. And I finished with the words of John the Baptist. "I am the I am not." He said, "I am." So the I am not finds its full and complete life and its completeness when it goes into the I am. So that's the fish in the sea. I think it's fantastic. So the divine will follows the soul everywhere. It even enjoys itself together with her. Now that's Proverbs 8:31. The Lord delights to be with the children of men and loves playing with them. It's not our image of God that we were given as children. Jesus said, "I could say that these souls are my glory, my honour, and the richness to whom my will gives birth." The working of the soul in my will is like the swimming and the darting of the fish in the terrestrial sea. But the soul does it in the celestial sea of the supreme volition. In other words, we're actually swimming in the heart of the Trinity, therefore in the heart of God, therefore in the heart of heaven, therefore in the eternal one, therefore in eternity. So you're living heaven on earth now. The only difference between heaven and earth for someone in the divine will is that we have the suffering side here on earth and the glory side in heaven. These souls are the hidden inhabitants of the celestial waves. Now notice the emphasis on hidden life. You see, people living at the ordinary level, or should I say the level of ordinary spirituality in the church, they manifest their love for God and their love for their neighbour by external works. People living in the divine will have shifted completely, and we live the hidden life of Christ on the earth. And so we live hidden with Christ in God. Now, that's exactly what St. Paul speaks about as well. I've only just, that's only just come to my head just now. Hidden with Christ in God. So what St. Paul said there, he wouldn't have known the fullness of, and that's typical of any of the writers in the Bible, that there's two authors, one is the human and the other is the divine. And the human author is often led by the divine author to say something that he himself doesn't know the fullness of, simply because God is going to reveal himself more and more and more. And so future generations will understand much more deeply than we understand, and we understand much more deeply than the generations that have gone before us. That's the way it is. So we live a life hidden with Christ in God. So these souls are the hidden inhabitants of the celestial waves, okay, who live from the immense inheritance, live out of, I should say, they live out of the immense inheritance of the infinite sea of my will. And just as the fish are hidden, disappeared inside the sea, they are mute, yet they form the glory of the sea and they serve as food for man. So, in the same way, do these souls seem disappeared? In other words, we're not out there on the big stage. We're not going on all these processions. We're not doing all these big projects. They seem disappeared inside of the divine sea. They are mute. Now, please take that on board. They are mute. They're silent. Yet they form the greatest glory of creation. And they are the primary cause for my letting descend upon the earth the delicious food of my will and my grace. Now, we've moved on. And so we must realize that there's no external razzmatazz. There's no big projects that we're doing, that we get ourselves, we dive into the sea of the divine will. We stay there hidden, silent, letting the divine will do what it wants in us and through us. So now we come to the second example that Jesus wanted to give, and it's Mother Earth. Another image of operating of the soul in my will is the earth. The souls who live in my will are the plants, the flowers, the trees and the seeds. With how much love does the earth not open in order to receive the seed? Rather, it does not open, it splits in order to place itself upon it and to help the seed to become dust with itself so as to be able to deliver more easily from its womb the plant which the seed contains. And as it begins to come out of its womb, it presses itself, the earth presses itself around it. It gives it the humours it contains, almost like food to make it grow. A mother couldn't be more as affectionate as Mother Earth. In fact, a mother does not always hold her newborn on her lap, nor does she constantly give him milk. While the earth, more than a mother, never detaches from the plant from her breast. Rather, the more it grows at the top, the more the earth sinks beneath, and it rips open to make space for its roots so as to let the plant grow more beautiful and strong. Its love and its jealousy are so great that it keeps it attached to its breast to give it life and continuous nourishment. Now notice the example of the sea, the water kept on taking care of the fish. And in the example of the earth continues without ever stopping to take care of the plant. So both of these are images of the soul in the divine will, where the Lord never, ever stops taking care of that soul. But the plants and the flowers are the most beautiful ornament of the earth. They are its happiness, its glory, and its richness, and they provide food for the human generations. Because anything that comes out of the Lord gives life to others. So more than Mother Earth, Jesus said, is my will for the soul who lives and operates in my will. More than a tender mother, I hide her in my will. I help her to let the seed of her will die. Notice the seed of her will. Very important. As the seed of the human will must die, that she may be reborn in mine. Now there you have the emphasis on when we truly enter into the divine will, we are reborn to a completely new life. Everything will be different. Absolutely everything will be different. I nourish her with the celestial milk of my divinity. My jealousy is such that I keep her attached to my breast, and I remain pressed around her that she may grow beautiful and strong in all in my likeness. So it's hidden with Christ in God. And we become a whole new creation in him, as Paul says. Therefore, my daughter, be attentive. Always operate in my will if you want to make your beloved Jesus content. I would like you to stop everything and to take this point of living and operating constantly in my will. There you have it. The Lord wants us to stop, and I'm saying this when the whole nation has stopped and we've given ourselves 2 weeks in order to try and get control of this coronavirus. He says to stop and to take this point alone and to go with that, to allow ourselves to be completely immersed in the divine will so that the divine will can give us a new birth from the womb of God and can bring us to live a celestial life on earth. So August the 14th, 1924. The delight of Jesus when the soul, like a little wheel, goes around constantly in the divine will. The operating of the divine will contains the creative power. So, Louisa said, I was thinking to myself, I would like to always go around in the divine will. I'd like to be like a little wheel, like the wheel of a clock that always rotates without ever stopping. But while I was thinking of this, my Jesus moved in my interior and said, my daughter, do you want always to go around in my will? That's exactly what he wants. Oh, how gladly and with what love do I want you to go around constantly in my will. Now notice that when a thought comes to us and we think it's our own, he in fact has actually given it to us. Your soul will be the little wheel. My will wind you. So he's thinking of the clock as well, to make you rotate rapidly without ever stopping. Your intention will be the starting point of where you want to go. So here we have the reminder that placing the intention is very important, no matter what you're doing in the divine will. Whatever way you want to take, whether it's in the past, the present, or the future, it's your free choice. You will always be dear to me, and you will give me the greatest delight, whatever starting point you choose. So sometimes we tell him, no, I want to go and do some work in purgatory. I want to go and work with the dying or with sinners who are rebelling against you or whatever it is. He doesn't mind where you start so long as you go. Then Jesus added, "Dearest daughter of my will, the operating of my will contains the creative power." Now, he's been trying to tell us this for quite a number of volumes. See, everything my humanity did while on earth, because everything was done in the supreme will, everything contains this creative power. So everything was done in the divine will. So much so that just as the sun is always in act, always full of light and heat, without ever decreasing or increasing in its full splendor, just as it was created by God, in the same way, everything I did is in act. Now, that means that all of these acts are eternal. And God lives in the eternal now. God doesn't live in the past. And God doesn't live in the future. He said, "I am." He lives in the eternal now. So when we enter into the divine will, we go outside of time and space and into eternity, where there's neither past nor future. That's why we can pray for everybody from Adam to Zachary. So, therefore, because all the acts of Jesus in his life are divine acts, and they are available eternally. So that means that we can enter into any of them anytime we like. And as far as he's concerned, it's the same as if you had been there 2,000 years ago. So I can join him now in his agony in the garden. I remember one time in a crisis asking the Lord, what should I do? And he said very simply, "Come, kneel in front of me." I mean, literally with his body over mine, he said, "Put your hands in mine and together put your agony with my agony, and together we will do it. We'll do what we have to do." So he said, "My agony will redeem yours, and together we will look after the souls that need to be looked after." I was thinking of particular souls. And so he just said, "We look after the souls you want." So everything that Jesus did in his lifetime is in act and available to us. That's why the priest only has to say, "This is my body and this is my blood," to join Jesus at the Last Supper. And it is, in fact, Jesus still pronouncing the same words. And that's why we say that the priest is in persona Christi, in the person of Christ. And that eternal act is being pronounced again and again and again and again over us. So, Jesus said, "Everything I did is all in act. And just as the sun belongs to everyone, to all and to each one, in the same way, in my operating, while being one, it belongs to all and to each one." So everything that Jesus did and said is for everybody and for you and I as individuals as well. Even more, he said, "My thoughts form a circle around each created intelligence. My gazes, my words, my works, my steps, my heartbeats, my pains, they all form a circle around the gazes, words, works and pains, etc. of creatures." So everything in him forms a circle around us, and we can enter into that. And if you're worried about the way somebody is thinking, just enter into that divine intelligence and let that divine intelligence cover the intelligence of the person you're praying for, so that they can be disposed to thinking the way God thinks, and all the rest. Jesus said, "I could say that like a circle, I guard all that the creature does." Now, if the creature thinks in my will, the circle of my thoughts opens and encloses her thoughts in mine. And so, taking part in the creative power, her thoughts perform the office of my intelligence before God and before creatures. It's mind-boggling. In the same way, if you look, if you speak, my gazes, my words form the place in which to receive yours and to form one single circle. It's quite literally Jesus in me and I in him. They perform the office of my gazes and of my works, and so with all the rest. So the souls who live in my will are my true repeaters, my inseparable images. Now, this, I think, is absolutely fascinating. Up to now, we've had Jesus in the early books, early volumes, we had Jesus refer to only to his mother as my inseparable mother. Then you get up to volume 11 and 12, and it's my inseparable Louisa. Now here he's talking about, in volume 17, that you and I have to be inseparable with him as well. So if our Blessed Mother is inseparable with Jesus and I am inseparable with Jesus, then I am inseparable with her. It's totally fascinating. Amazing. Hard to take on board. The souls who live in my will are my true repeaters. In other words, we repeat his life. They are my inseparable images, which are portrayed in them and absorbed again in me, so that everything they do may remain with the seal that those are my works as they continue my own very office. So I want to give you John 14:12. So in this context of the enormity of the privilege that is given to us, the next message puts in a very important correction into the system, and that is that if we distrust him, it is a terrible insult. So September the 2nd, 1924, how much harm distrust causes the soul. So Louisa said, I was feeling very oppressed but all abandoned in the arms of Jesus, and I prayed him to have compassion on me. But while I was doing this, I felt I was losing consciousness, and I saw a little girl. She was weak, pale, and all engrossed in deep melancholy coming out from within me. And Blessed Jesus, going towards her, took her in his arms and, moved to pity, pressed her to his heart. And with his hands, he touched her forehead, making her eyes, her lips, her breast, and all the members of the little girl, marking them with the sign of the cross. And as he was doing this, she would regain strength, acquire colour, and stir herself from that state of melancholy. And Jesus, seeing that the little girl was reacquiring strength, would clasp her more tightly to himself to strengthen her more. And he said to her, poor little one, what a state you are in. But don't fear, your Jesus will make you come out of this state. So while this was happening, Louisa thought, who is this little girl that came out from me and that Jesus loves so much? And Jesus said, my daughter, this is your soul. And I love her so much that I cannot tolerate seeing you so melancholic and weak. This is why I've come to infuse new life and new vigour into you. Now, there it has been handed to you on a plate. If you're feeling down, discouraged, and all the rest of it, you simply ask the Lord to infuse new life and new vigour into you. On hearing this, Louisa said, my love and my life, Jesus, how I fear that you might leave me. How shall I go on without you? How shall I be able to live? To what a deplorable state will my poor soul be reduced? What a harrowing pain is the thought that you might leave me. A pain that lacerates me, takes peace away from me and puts hell in my heart. Jesus, have pity, compassion, have mercy on me, a little child. That's Matthew 18, verses 1 to 3. I have no one, she said. If you leave me, everything is over for me. And Jesus, resuming his speech, added, my daughter, calm yourself. Do not fear. Your Jesus does not leave you. I'm jealous of your trust. And I do not want you to even slightly distrust me. So now he's going to talk about the importance of confidence in God. And I want to remind you that Saint Therese of Lisieux said that you will receive from God exactly as much as you trust him for. No more, no less. We must trust him beyond reason. That is something the Lord told me nearly 10 years ago to tell everybody I ever came in contact with, that times were going to become more and more challenging and that, you know, there's panic out in the world at the moment because of the coronavirus, that lots of things would happen, but we were to trust him beyond reason. We were not to listen to the world, we're to listen to him. So Jesus said, I love so much that souls be with me in full trust, that many times I hide some defect or imperfection of theirs or some lack of correspondence to my grace so as not to give them any occasion not to come back in full trust. That's a bit like the parent won't say a solitary word about the little girl who has cut her dress or her blouse or whatever else, because they want the child to come back in full trust to them. In fact, if the soul loses trust, she remains as though separated from me and all huddled up within herself. Well, that's not going to achieve anything. She places herself at due distance from me and remains paralyzed in her surge of love, and therefore paralyzed in sacrificing herself for me. Oh, how much harm does distrust cause? It can be said that it is like the spring frost that blocks the vegetation of the plants. And many times, if the frost is strong, it can even make them die. In the same way, distrust blocks the development of virtue and puts freezing cold into the most ardent love. Oh, how many times, because of lack of trust, my designs and the greatest sanctities have been blocked. What a tragedy, just for lack of trust. This is why I tolerate some defects rather than distrust, because those can never be so harmful. Isn't that amazing? Your faults and failings don't do as much damage at all as not trusting the Lord. And besides, how can I leave you if I've worked so much in your soul? Take a look at how much I had to work. And while saying this, he showed a sumptuous and great palace worked by the hands of Jesus in the depths of my soul. And then he resumed speaking. I want to give you Ephesians 2:10 for that. We are God's work of art. He said, my daughter, how can I leave you? Take a look at how many rooms, John 14:2, in my Father's house, there are many rooms. They're almost innumerable. In other words, he has expanded her soul in an incredible way. Look as much knowledge, look at the effects, the values, the qualities that I have made known to you in my will, and so many rooms with each one of these I have formed in you in which to deposit all these goods. In other words, as the Lord gives us more, he has to expand us more to be able to receive it. There's nothing left but to add some more varieties of some different colours in order to portray more rare beauties of my supreme will, to give more prominence and honour to my work. And you fear that I might leave such a great crafting of mine? It costs me too much. There is my will involved in it, he said. And where my will is, there is life. And life is not subject to death. Anyway, he says, your fear is nothing but a little bit of distrust on your part. Wow. So now she has the self-revelation she actually needed. That she, the little bit of distrust, that she doesn't trust him absolutely to come back every time. Therefore, trust me, he said, and we will get on well, and I will accomplish the work of my will. So I want to give you a number of references on trust, and then we'll leave it there. Philippians 1:6, the Lord will finish the job that he started if you let him. 2 Samuel 22:3. In him will I trust. Psalm 4, verse 5. Psalm 5, verse 11. Psalm 16, verse 1. Psalm 25, verse 2. Psalm 62, verse 8. Psalm 91, verse 4. And 1 Timothy 4:10. I want to take a break there.